Hello, everyone, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. Bruce Ash and co-host Eb Wilkinson welcoming you to a special Fair Trade and Second Amendment edition of Inside Track. It's an absolutely beautiful May 17th here in southern Arizona. And it's also a very good day in Australia, where Conservative Scott Morrison has scored an impressive victory in their just-concluded national election. One more sign that the We the People principles, which resonate here in this country, appear to be resonating all over the world, including Australia. We have a great show for you today. In just a few minutes, Trump 2020 spokesperson, retired Marine, Gunnery Sergeant Jesse Jane Duff will join us to talk about fair trade talks with China, as well as other developments in the trade negotiations this week. In the second half hour, we'll chat with NRA, the new NRA, Second Vice President Willis Lee, about what I think is the attempted political assassination of NRA Executive Wayne LaPierre by Oliver North and their PR firm, Ackerman McQueen. Kind of an incredible story. First, as always, thank you so much for supporting our great Inside Track sponsors, Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management. I got that right this week, didn't I?
You do great.
Yeah, all right. And Corazon Cabinets. These are great local businesses you should be doing business with. So let's get to it. Before we hear from Sergeant Jesse Jane Duff on trade, let me give you something to consider. Look, President Trump did not start the trade war with China. In fact, China started this war from even before the time when the U.S. had begun to shepherd China into the WTO and helped develop that primitive country at the time into the industrial giant it has become. Let's face facts. China cheats. It isn't good enough that China has low-cost labor to keep its products competitively priced or loads of natural resources. The USA is their biggest market, and to further improve their own position, the Chinese government has encouraged and sanctioned industrial espionage. China has stolen hundreds of billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars worth of intellectual properties, not only from United States companies, but countries around the world. China has long resisted fair trade access to its fast-growing markets. China has used licensing agreements with USA companies and others to not only steal ideas, but to dump their products into the world market at a loss. Ask Boeing and GM about their experiences. China has manipulated their currency to their advantage. They will deny most or all of these charges, but it's time for the Chinese to fess up and be held responsible as partners in trade. Now, it's been reported that a deal was close with the Chinese government, but the Chinese negotiators reneged on especially important points related to their theft of intellectual properties. The U.S. team may have been too generous in their approach or even enthusiasm on the talks to the wily Chinese negotiators. And you know, it's not unusual for a trade competitor, especially from the East, to pull back on an agreement merely to get back leverage on other points. The USA will eventually win this tug of war. The lead Chinese trade negotiator, Vice Premier Liu He, last week suggested that perhaps they would wait for the 2020 election and look then for a better deal from a Democrat president. Advice to Mr. He and Chinese President for Life Xi: you will never get a better deal than the one on the table now. Wait for elections, and I will guarantee you, you will not like the results, because Donald Trump will be reelected. And by the way, We know your economy is slowing down considerably at home, weakened by tariffs. Life under trade sanctions will not be pleasant, nor will the political considerations for the current leadership. Waiting us out also opens new opportunities for others in developing countries to attract American customers and erode China's market share. As I said, America did not start the current trade war, but our economy is resilient enough to stay in the fight for as long as it takes and end the trade war, one way or another. Now, we're waiting for our guest, Jesse, to join us, and hopefully she'll be here soon. Eb, you're in the financial markets, working at it every day. What has the reaction been in the markets to the trade deal going south?
People are pretty much ignoring it for the long term. In the short term, you're going to see some volatility there, and people get nervous. You'll see the market go down 2%, up 2%. But if you're taking a look at it on a longer-term basis, it's pretty much benign.
How so?
Well, first of all, there's going to be a deal that gets done. There's no choice. I mean, the U.S. and China have to work together. They've got this symbiotic, parasitic relationship where they both need each other. We need Chinese goods. They need our goods. We need their money. They need our money. I mean, that's just how it works. You take a look at the farmers with the soybeans. When Trump came out and said that he was going to help all those farmers out, the markets immediately stabilized, right. And now it's on to business as usual.
You bet. Okay. Hey, our guest is here with us, Jesse Jane Duff. Are you with us on the phone?
Hey, good afternoon or good morning. Is it morning there? It's afternoon.
It's
good
early
afternoon from the swamp. That's where I'm calling from, Washington, D.C. My goodness, I'm surviving among the alligators.
Hey, Gunnery Sergeant Jesse Jane Duff, U.S. Marine Corps, is retired, is a highly decorated veteran. From 2012 to 2014, she worked as a military advisor and was on the Organization Committee for Concerned Veterans for America. She is also a highly visible advocate for Military and Overseas Empowerment Act, that's the MOVE Act, which became federal law the same year. Jesse provides military, veterans, national security, business, and political analysis for the Fox News Channel, Fox Business Channel, and they even have this lady on CNN, CNBC, and numerous local and national television and radio stations like us here at KVOI. She's a prolific contributor to various blogs, articles, op-eds for publications, and Jesse's work can be found in a wide array of publications. Jesse, welcome. I wonder if our paths may have crossed at some time. I was one of the movers for the MOVE Act at the RNC, and as RNC rules chair, I actually helped include military voting rights into our party rules in 2012. So I thank you for your work to preserve voting rights for our armed force members.
Yeah, we probably did cross. I had gone down to Tampa and advocated to all of the surrogates that were down there that were campaigning for Romney, and we advocated for the rules to get changed. I may have even spoken to you personally about it because essentially the law got passed, but in order for those ballots to get out overseas on time, we had to ensure that the Republican Party caucuses included, like your Iowa caucus that does not have an open election process, that would include military members who are stationed overseas to be able to participate in those caucuses. And it was a big change for us, and I was very pleased to see it happen. The states got on board, and we got the ballots sent overseas on time. Sadly, though, it's not being enforced by DOD, and Department of Defense is not ensuring that the active duty members are being able to register to vote. But that's another story. We won't talk about that now, but we'd love to get back on that some point.
Yeah, so this week has been filled with lots of positive trade news, like the USMCA agreements on steel and aluminum with Canada and Mexico, and although the markets were initially jolted, as I was just talking to my co-host, Eb Wilkinson, about by the increased tariffs, they kind of settled down in a day or so. Your comments, was part of the settle down having to do, as Eb just talked about, the Trump administration offering subsidies to soybean farmers, do you think?
Well, you know, the president is really concerned about, you know, basically our Midwest and areas that are impacted by some of these trade deals that are going or tariffs that are happening. Yes, it's hitting farmers right now. And the steel industry in itself was struggling because even like in Wisconsin, you have Harley Davidson there. So it's great that these tariffs were lifted because the national security argument was probably flawed, considering that Canada and Mexico have been some of our strongest allies on our borders. So I'm pleased to see that this happened. It's now looking like it could move forward. I think that Trudeau in Canada, he's looking at not being reelected himself. Their parliament gets out of session on June 21st, so we are kind of up against a deadline to get this passed. It may be seen as a win for Trudeau. And Mexico has already started to put a lot of this in place. So it looks like everything's moving forward in a positive direction. Of course, you've got that Democrats that are going to try to throw a wrench in there, which Nancy Pelosi already is. However, I expect that this will pass. This is one of the issues that President Trump can see as a win, but at the same time, it benefits American workers. And if Democrats vote against it, it does not benefit them.
Jesse, let's hold here for a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back after telling us why all of our good listeners here at KVY should be listening and doing business with them. Let's take a couple commercial messages, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Inside Track. We're speaking to our guest, Jesse Jane Duff. Jesse, in a New York Times piece from yesterday, Keith Bradshaw led off his piece by writing, "China usually gets its way in Washington, on Wall Street, and in corporate boardrooms. Beijing has used the country's size and promise for decades to quell opposition and reward those who helped its rise. But those days may be coming to an end." Do you agree?
Well, I expect that President Trump is going to be very strong with China to a point that they have no choice but to acquiesce. These tariffs are going to be pretty significant. They're going to impact the trade significantly. Yes, that does get passed on often to American consumers, but what that forces is that American consumers turn to other avenues to purchase products. What we have to ultimately recognize is if you can't look short term, you have to look long term. This will enhance opportunity for Americans and American jobs. And when you are building our economy and making us have a rigorous employment base, the cheap labor and goods coming from China, we can't compete with that. And if you're looking at a short-term solution because you just want to make a trip to Walmart and save money, guess what? Walmart's actually been very supportive because they know how to work around these things. Walmart is very strategic. They know that they can build businesses within other regions of the world, for example, and within the United States. The president is 100% right on this, that multiple administrations have failed to address the issues with China, not only just with trade practices, but the way they have dominated. They have 30% of the 5G network, which means that they actually are building technology that they can spy on people who purchase their technology because it's embedded with what they want to look and watch for. That is not good. They've also done a lot of cyber sabotage. I worked in cyber for a number of years, and as I recall, it was thousands of times an hour that the Chinese were trying to hack into our systems. They've also stolen a lot of our technology. So it's enough is enough, because you cannot, when you look at China, they're overly aggressive. They have built up the South China Sea. They have an influence in South America. A lot of what's going on down there in Venezuela has China, Russia, and Cuban influence. That impacts the United States. And when the United States is being disrupted by them, that is by design. They are doing this on purpose. It benefits them when it hurts us. So the president's on the right track with this. It's important. And yes, there's going to be a little bit of pain in this. And he's been very clear about that. He hasn't denied that. He hasn't sugarcoated that. But we have to be able to get past this with China. Otherwise, we're going to remain stagnant and always on our knees to them. And at some point, we need to be standing on our feet.
So, Jess, even though some U.S. businesses have caved into the Chinese, pardon me, other businesses are turning away from China. Some call it the ABC supply chain, as in anywhere but China. Again, in this Bradshaw article from the New York Times, he says, this past Wednesday, Kelly A. Kramer, the chief financial officer of the big telecom equipment supplier Cisco, told investors that the company had greatly reduced its exposure to China because of the tariffs. And don't you think that a lot of manufacturers, a lot of suppliers here in this country are going to start looking to produce the same sort of products in other countries, which really does leave China vulnerable? They have a lot to lose in this. If they think they can wait us out, they're sadly mistaken, don't you believe?
Oh, I believe that 100%. But we also have to get to a point where we're manufacturing also in this country again.
Yep.
You know, the president, within, I think, the first year of his administration, there were over 400,000 or 500,000 new manufacturing jobs. We have to be able to have the capability to produce products within our country again. The outsourcing has basically become cheap labor throughout the world, and that's why there's a lot of questions over some of these immigration policies. How will it impact American wages? When you're bringing in foreign workers because you say you don't have enough workers, the studies are showing that if you have 15% of immigrants in any one field, the wages drop roughly about 12% for across the board. So I'm all for skilled labor coming across the country, coming into the country, as long as it's productive and helping our country. But I'm not for American wages dropping on for that. The only reason there should be anybody coming in here to take a job is because there's not an American who is available to take the job. And right now, we can't unequivocally say that. We have also really failed as a country with a lot of our technical training for some of our youth, because I know from being in the staffing industry for years, watching the number of resumes coming over my desk when I needed a U.S. citizen, all I was seeing were H-1B visa people requiring sponsorship. We were saturated with a foreign market in highly technical jobs. And engineers now are struggling to get jobs because the foreign worker can often be brought in for a lower wage. That is a very big problem. Aside from the illegal immigration, I'm talking about the legal immigration now. We're making strides on legal immigration, but a lot of the authorization now for legal immigrants has increased in number because we're getting rid of some of these other failed policies, such as chain migration, the visa lottery program, things like that, that offered no benefit to the U.S. So when you getting back to your question, though, about the impact, you know, we have to be able to sustain ourselves as a nation in manufacturing. You're 100% right. Often companies do look to outsource to other forms of labor throughout the world. They want the cheapest way of bringing something back in to sell it to the American consumer. But again, I stress, we have to have jobs for American people. If we put America first, we can prosper. I don't recommend shutting down the rest of the world, but why aren't we the ones exporting these great products and widgets and gadgets so that we are the ones profiting from it versus bringing it in from, because all we're doing is encouraging a lot of regimes throughout the world. The Chinese do not support their people. They have some of the most horrific human rights violations in the world. Christians are persecuted. Many people are persecuted in there. The property rights, the human rights violations, we could go on and on. Essentially, the communists run what the businesses do. And really, do we want to be a part of encouraging and financially supporting that?
And that's a good point on our businesses, because they really do end up sometimes bowing down to President Xi, and they take a stronger hand in American business doing business in China. They're forced to forge ties with the Communist Party, which it's sort of just this creepy, awful feeling that I get when I hear information like that. Is it good for American ideas to cave in on these core issues? I don't think so. Do you?
Not at all. I agree with you. We have to have America first. We have to have pride in country. We're losing a lot of this with this globalist mindset. And, you know, we see it throughout Europe where they have just kind of this open borders. And now you've got countries like Poland and I believe, is it Hungary? I could be wrong. That have said, no, you're not coming into
That's
our
correct.
Country unless you are of our ideals, the same religious background. Because if people think religion doesn't matter, where have they been? They have been burying their heads in a for the last 15 years. And in fact, longer than that, I have never forgotten the objective of the Iranians back in 1983 when they killed close to over 200 Marines and a few soldiers that were in the barracks in Lebanon. That was Iranian-backed Hezbollah. And where are we today? We're in a worse situation. We have not resolved these problems, and that Islamic ideology that has practiced to destroy the West, you now have the Sunni and Shia Hamas working with al-Qaeda because it benefits them to destroy the U.S., although they're naturally rivals. You know, basically Osama bin Laden got a lot of his training from Hamas, and that would have been unthinkable at one point because Sunni and Shia do not mix.
Yeah.
But when it comes to destroying the West, when it just comes to destroying Christians and Jews, that is where they unite wholeheartedly. And that objective is clear as day in many ways. And if you want to try to say you have to practice tolerance, but you're not aware of what your enemy striking against you is doing, you're being ignorant and naive. That is exactly what the mindset has seen many countries collapse, because they turn the other way, they want to be accepting, and meanwhile, those that want to take away your freedoms and your rights are oppressing upon you.
Hey, Jesse, in the last couple of minutes that we have left before the break, you know, when you consider the usual negative press directed at the president, the media so far has not been too harsh to him on trade. Do you think this further suggests that that President Trump, Ambassador Lighthizer, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin are getting this issue right on trade?
Well, what's interesting is we're seeing Chuck Schumer uniting with the president. I mean,
that's a first, isn't it?
I looked out the window to see if pigs were flying. it was rather shocking to me. And then I started questioning, are we doing something wrong? Because he's supporting it. I've become rather cynical. But maybe there's finally someone in Washington saying, how long are we going to keep doing this bickering, because we're going to all lose our elections, Democrat and Republican, if we are not making some form of headway? Because at the end of the day, the only person Chuck Schumer really needs to care about is Chuck Schumer's reelection. And if him getting behind this is going to help him get reelected or those that he works with reelected, then he knows it's a win. He cannot go down fighting every single matter where it just becomes such chaos that we throw them all out of Congress, which we have done on several occasions. We've even seen Republicans jump ship. Paul Ryan didn't want to run for re-election because he was a never-Trumper. There were about 40-some-odd Republicans that lost their seats or decided not to run again in this last cycle because they could not get behind President Trump. Well, I say good riddance. Unfortunately, now we have a Democratic Congress that hopefully will continue to make things so miserable that people vote them out too. Like, I can't, you know, I don't like to root for failure, but it seems that, you know, we're never getting tired of winning, and the Democrats have never gotten tired of losing. That just seems to be the way it's going right now.
Jesse, you're on fire, kiddo. Thanks very much for coming on the show today. I hope you'll come back again. You are an expert on a lot of different areas, and looking forward to speaking with you again soon. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a great day, Motivator.
All right. Thanks. We'll be right back with Willis Lee, the second vice president at the NRA, talking about the political assassination of Wayne LaPierre, the attempted assassination. We'll be right back. Now, our special guest for the remainder of the show today, Willis Lee, the newly elected second vice president of the NRA. Willis, welcome back to Inside Track. We have lots to cover. What the heck is going on at the NRA? Wow.
Hi, Bruce. How are you today? You coined it right just before the break, the attempted assassination of Wayne LaPierre, and thank God they missed. Look, there's a lot going on. I am Willis Lee. I've been on the show before. Last time, Bruce, you and I spoke, I was actually at the Great American Outdoor Show. So this time, I'm at CNP, and we'll hit a little bit of that later. We'll see how much we can cover today, because, boy, is there a lot. I think your listener is going to be interested.
Yep.
I believe the overall attack on the NRA right now is funded by Bloomberg. It's affected to 150 paid staff operatives hired to kill the NRA. And their goal, simply, though, is to neutralize the NRA in the 2020 election to prevent President Trump's election. Their attacks, including government tyranny by Cuomo, who's weaponizing the New York Department of Financial Services, are how they hope to end the NRA. And listen to this. Bloomberg himself, this isn't counting Soros and Steyer, pledged at least $120 million to spend on the 2020 elections. And the majority of that's to stop President Trump. So he's aiming at the NRA, not other no-compromise groups or self-proclaimed activists or whiny bloggers, just the NRA. The good news is that we've worked for months to be in good shape for these attacks by New York. The tactics, you notice, Bruce, they're just like what the Dems and some of our side, the same tactics that they used on candidate Trump and they tried in the Kavanaugh hearings. They didn't work then either.
Hey, Willis, it's Eb Wilkinson. How are you?
Hi, Eb. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Hey, with all the attacks going on in New York, why does the NRA just not pull stakes from New York and go somewhere else?
Well, it isn't that easy. Once you're established in a state legally, then you're bound by their laws, and we have to be in compliance with their laws before we can pull stakes. So there's some things we have to do there. And once we go through all this process, that could be considered. But we were established in New York. We have a great tradition in New York. It'd be sad to see us leave. So right now, that's not the effort. The effort is to be in compliance with their laws and then move forward from that. This whole thing, though, is an effort to distract us from our primary mission, which is firearms education, training, and safety. That effort's failing. There's no disruption of our services. We're actually getting better in our programs, which I'll touch on later. However, I got to give them political kudos. Bruce, you and I have done a lot of political work, especially through the RNC and other organizations. We are distracted. All our listeners should be concerned that the NRA could be distracted from winning in 2020. Now, we won't be, but this is why a lot of the attacks are coming from all sorts of directions, funded by billionaires. Not necessarily coordinated, but they're taking advantage of the timing. Let's remember, most Democrats want to see the Second Amendment destroyed, and Democrats and true Second Amendment supporters know that only the NRA can stop them from destroying the Second Amendment.
Willis, with that being said, some of the attacks aren't just coming from the outside, but in some ways they're coming from the inside. For example, the fight with the PR firm Ackerman McQueen. What the heck's going on with that? And do you think that was one of the things that started this whole bit?
Yeah, we see all sorts of stuff happening. Some is just people piling on. But you're right, Eb. And I'll tell you, for some, especially even our friends and supporters, some of the people won't like my answers regardless of the response because they're angry or they're a hater or they're frustrated and they want some action. I get that. Me too. There is positive action. We are winning, just like many times before, to save your semis and gain concealed carry, just like those battles. Now, I don't know who's noticed because there's been distractions. I came to the NRA after much of what was being discussed actually occurred, so I'm reading about a lot of this and learning more. There's no newer leadership blood than me, and I'm humbled at being on the board only after this short time. I didn't come with all the NRA blessings. I ran by petition when I got elected. I began by attending GRPCs, being a life member of SAF and GOA. So I worked hard to get informed, and apparently what we're hearing is other board members haven't necessarily taken their duty as seriously. My dog in this fight is the NRA. And we have that relationship with Ackerman McQueen, and that has been a lot of the fight. And I don't know if you guys want me to go into detail here.
We would.
Or do that another time.
No, we would.
That's super. Look, here's the most important thing. To hold the line against the Democrats, the 2A community, Second Amendment community, led by the NRA, has to be unified. But hey, ACMAC is a PR firm. Second Amendment supporters who would never believe the mainstream media, the New York Times, come on. And the haters are suddenly listening to the New York Times. Come on. But that's what PR firms do. Are there questions out there? Of course, because leakers and the media and even uninformed board members know that we're constrained by lawsuits or executive sessions. So look, you know when I'm normally on your show, I'm an absolute straight shooter. I am this time, but I have to be aware that whatever I say won't interfere in our legal proceedings. Now, the Wall Street Journal and New York Times said this is an ACMAC shakedown. That was their terms, their extortion of Wayne LaPierre, over really what began as they're hiding Colonel North's contract from us. One email, you'd mentioned it earlier, Bruce, referred to ACMAC's assassination attempt on Wayne LaPierre. Look, NRA is working hard and has worked hard to be in compliance with New York nonprofit law. And there's hundreds of vendors that we have. If you can imagine all of those contracts we signed, some of them kicking and screaming because it was a lot of work. Every one of them provided the documentation we needed to be in compliance. Every single one, except ACMAC. And it was puzzling because we had a really close relationship. And for months, Ackerman McQueen wouldn't provide what is legally our records. when they refuse to give us the necessary stuff, such as Ollie's contract and even simple metrics for NRA TV, well, damn, I'm surprised NRA didn't sue a month or three earlier. A lot of people, including me, agree with the New York Times that it appears that they made good on their threat of a scorched earth campaign if Wayne didn't lift the lawsuit. Well, Wayne's not going to lift the lawsuit requiring ACMAC to turn over documents. And sure enough, we're in this fight with our own PR firm.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. So Wayne, basically the NRA filed a lawsuit against ACMAC. So this is a civil case, not a criminal case. ACMAC basically came back and said, drop the lawsuit, resign immediately, or we're going to release this information. To Wayne's credit, he basically said, screw off, I'm not resigning and I'm not rescinding the lawsuit. And now it seems like that's where all this stuff is coming out. So some of the documents that are coming out are talking about dealings with inside the organization, people benefiting cost-wise, et cetera. How many people are actually involved in that? How many actually have, I don't know what you want to call it, conflicts of interest?
Well, the conflicts of interest and the way we deal with those, each of us submits our financial disclosure forms, but conflicts of interest span the whole realm. And so obviously, if you are in the gun industry or you're a competitor or somewhere else and you have sponsors, there may be conflicts of interest. In this case, if you're referring specifically to Ackerman McQueen.
Yeah, how many people involved with the NRA actually have a contract with Ackerman McQueen?
I don't know. I know on our board, as we've been polling, and everybody is in agreement that if you have a contract or if you're being funded by Ackerman McQueen, that you recuse yourself from any decisions involving them. But I don't know the answer on that.
Okay, but on the board, there's only a few, just a couple, right?
Oh, there's a handful. You're going to be able to count them on one hand, and Colonel North was one. I'm not sure that there are any others that are actually on the board and doing this. But there's so many different contracts and relationships. We have some board members who do NRA TV shows, as an example. So there's a lot of, but they may not be on the Ackerman McQueen payroll. They may be consultants.
But all of this stuff is disclosed, correct?
I mean, so those are all of that's disclosed, and I'll tell you that a lot of it's being leaked, and our folks want to call themselves whistleblowers, but we have to deal with their leaks. And anybody on the board, like, they can pull a Manning, like a Chelsea Manning, but I don't believe they're being honorable. They're just leaking information. And so about everything we have is out there. And I tell you, to members' credit, and this is what's interesting, and you guys know this from our other political life, inside the Beltway, everybody's talking about this. Last night I went to a friend's NRA dinner. It was fun and upbeat and successful. This isn't what they're talking about. Ackerman McQueen, New York lawsuits. They're talking about what's coming up next with the NRA, our shooting competitions, our training. The few that had questions for me about this, they were willing to listen, as was I of their concern. So I tell you, we're the ones who are talking about this, and it is important, but this isn't what the majority of our members concerned about.
Well, so we're going to go ahead and take a 3-minute break for our great advertising partners. And when we come back, we'll talk about the question, who else could do Wayne LaPierre's job or would? So you're listening to Willis Lee, second vice president with the NRA. This is Bruce. Ebb's across the aisle from me. You're listening to Inside Track. Be right back. Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce Ash here with Ebb Wilkinson. We're talking with Willis Lee, second vice president at the NRA. So before the break, I asked you to think about this, Willis. Who else could do Wayne LaPierre's job, or better yet, who would?
Yeah, I tell you what, this is something we've learned. You and I, Bruce, Ebb, we have to live in the world as it is, not as we wish it were. So all this idea, they can't infringe on our rights and gun confiscation laws are unconstitutional. States must obey federal laws. And recently, they can't ban my 30-round mag. Hey, I agree, and you agree, but it's happening. And thankfully, the NRA, you and I are here to deal in the real world with real politicians who make these decisions. Look, the other day I had some guy message me that he'd do Wayne's job for less. For one, he has no idea what is LaPierre's job. I mean, that's similar to the words coming from an uninformed board member. I've been VP for, a couple weeks now? So I'm getting a taste of Wayne's job. You can't even imagine at all And I've led men in combat. I've been a state party chairman for a Republican Party. I've been on the RNC. I'm currently the president of the NFRA. I know that you can't know what the seat's like until you sit in it. Well, hey, whoever that Bubba is that messaged me, you keyboard commandos and tiny one-man orgs and you writers that aren't in leadership positions, you have no idea. Actually, most of these guys probably don't have any idea who the U.S. senators are or be able to call them on the phone. Look, here's the clincher. All right, get this. LaPierre has to raise $1 million a day. And that's what $350 million a year looks
Nobody
like.
Else mm-hmm. in the world could do that. That's an incredible number.
No, absolutely. And if you've done this kind of business, Bruce, like you, me, and Eb, and we do fundraisers, that's what I tell people. Let that sink in. But here's what I'll throw out is $1 million a day, every day, 365. I'll make this offer. If any of our listeners out here can raise $1 million a day for 365 days a year, please message me. We need to talk.
And for 25 plus years.
And do it for 25 years, yeah.
And absolutely. Let's go further.
Now, hey, look, let me throw a side note in here, and you'll hear this from me, because we're going to have more board elections coming up, and this is why my standard for anybody even being on the board is so high. We're defending freedom here. That's friggin' important, and some, including the Democrats, believe we're the only ones defending freedom. And we're running a $350 million nonprofit, which I call a corporation, with hundreds of employees, thousands of volunteers, and millions who count on us. So I don't take board membership nor the NRA staff lightly. This is important work.
Well, let's talk about that, raising the $350 million a year. Bruce and I were talking earlier about him having to raise $1 million a day. Let's take a look at the second organization out there, GOA. Their annual budget is about $2 to $2.5 million a year. I mean, that's their annual budget. So,
well, I'm kind of curious where it's spent, because I know GOA does some amicus briefs, and I will tell you, and I've made a point of this, I don't hit on any other Second Amendment organization or individual as much as they're just pounding me on social media now.
I'm not hitting on that. I'm just using it as a reference point. There are no other Second Amendment organizations out there that can do what the NRA does with the budget it has. And when you figure out how much he has to do, the salary that he's getting, I'm sorry, he's not paid enough.
Well, one of the things that people miss is, because we are in the political world, ILA is like a quarter of what the NRA does. Our mission, our big pot, is that general operation stuff, all the education, training, and safety. Then we have the foundations, and we have the legal funds and things like that. I was just here to protect all that other stuff that is our mission, that what we do. So a ton of that money goes other places. And so GOA, I mean, bless them, they don't win elections. They don't have a ground game. They don't do firearms training. So they have a niche, and it's good that they're here. And I think they have an important message to put out there. But you're absolutely right. I didn't realize it was $2 to $2.5 million.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, you asked what they spend their money on. A third of that goes to salaries and compensation.
Okay, so that's a good reference for listeners to know that. I don't go after these guys. I didn't study their stuff. I appreciate what Alan Gottlieb does with the Second Amendment Foundation.
He does a great job.
I love his work. Yeah, I love what Alan does. I spend as much time with him as I can, but I didn't know that about GOA.
Yeah, now let's talk about stuff in the social media. You know, there's a lot of detractors out there in the social media, the keyboard commandos. And we're also seeing some from the NRA board members. Can you talk about that at all? Is that even something that should be addressed?
Wow. I tell you, right now, if anything, in the Second Amendment movement, folks have to understand we need unity. And we have unity, but there are some detractors, some haters out there. Now, they don't represent the community, no matter what they say or what they claim. And I've gone through and tried to think of what motives would a Second Amendment supporter have to want NRA to go away or to cause a fight? And I have a theory. And a lot of these people have, it's for personal gain or it's to settle an old score. And there's no other way you can explain why they are so angry, so upset with the NRA. With the board members internally, it's disappointing. You know, we went through this whole election process in Indianapolis recently. And according to the press release, Wayne LaPierre, as an example, well, all the officers, but Wayne LaPierre was elected unanimously without anyone voting nay. In fact, best you can glean from the press release, no one even spoke out. No one stood up. No one called for a roll call vote. No one put themselves in nomination. So now we have a couple board members who have kind of sketchy personal backgrounds anyway, coming out publicly and complaining about the leadership. Well, I don't think that's honorable. I think it's dishonorable. I'm certainly, from my West Point point of view of duty, honor, country, that's not what these people are.
Yeah, Willis, and you know, it's the duty of anybody who disagrees with the top or the policies from the top to speak their mind, but, you know, go with the group and not be disruptive. And there's a great deal of disruptive activity going on.
Well, it is, but I'll tell you, and here's the worst part about it, because of what they called their integrity. And I don't like the fact that they went personal. They called our leadership and my friends liars. And we know, at least in politics, you just don't do that. But if they are convinced our leadership is liars, our organization's corrupt, then they need to leave. I mean, right? I mean, I don't see how their conscience, right, if they are truly bound by integrity, allows them to remain members of the organization. So I'm waiting to see if they do that. I think that would be honorable on their part. We'll see.
Now, the board members, they rotate out every 3 years or are subject to reelection every 3 years. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. And hey, let me hit this. This is a handful of board members who don't understand what it takes to have the unity to move forward. So I hate working with them. Everywhere we've got a bell-shaped curve. And the far majority are great at what we do, and there's this couple of unprofessional ones at the bottom. But our NRA members, our board, the leadership, we're all united.
So let's talk about what the NRA board members are doing along with the executive leadership to keep in the game and be prepared for 2020. Because, I mean, all this stuff is a distraction, of course, but knowing how the NRA operates a little bit from my perspective, I know that you guys always have your ball on the 2020 elections, and it's about, you know, preserving Second Amendment. So tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. A lot of it is just where we are right now, and some I can't delve into, but we're going to win in New York. We're going to win in 2020, and we'll keep winning for the Second Amendment. We can't lose sight, with all this going on, of Bloomberg's effort to neutralize the NRA for 2020.
And this is a Bloomberg operation. This is a Bloomberg source operation.
Absolutely, certainly from the Democrat and the liberal side, but I'd say even some of our own, what we would call friends, may be funded either directly or indirectly through Bloomberg. And look, with all this political noise, it's easy to lose sight of the great work the NRA is doing. Our primary mission is general ops, education, safety, and training. The programs are growing stronger with new leadership every day. I mean, we ask programs to find cost savings, and they have. We asked to revamp our gold standard training program with 115,000 firearms instructors. And we've surveyed over 150 schools nationwide through NRA School Shield. And here's a number I love to throw out. Eddie Eagle, we've now reached over 31 million children. So there's all kinds of great stuff happening. We'll always be addressing issue. The fake media and the Second Amendment enemies don't want you to know, but we're actually getting stronger. We're dealing with the issues they've seen, most of them from a year ago, but we're dealing with all those, and we're getting ready for 2020. So thank you guys for asking me and having me on.
Well, so you got 1 minute left. So talk about where we need to be focusing on the positive accomplishments. You talked about Eddie Eagle. You talked about a lot of the education, but NRA is an active political group as well to protect the Second Amendment, and that work continues. Chris Cox and everything he does, and this is going on statewide levels as well, correct?
With national, federally, at states, and even local initiatives, we're on those. And what you're seeing more and more because of what President Trump's done with the courts, you're seeing more and more of our issues being brought into the courts. So that's working. And I'll tell you, all this is going to culminate again in 2020. And we don't win in 2020, then the Second Amendment is toast. So folks got to keep their eye on that. And if you see anybody out there fighting among ourselves, the Second Amendment guys who say they're trying to help, all they're doing is distracting. They're keeping us from winning in 2020, and they are the bad guys. We need to win 2020. That's the big game, guys.
Hey, Willis, it is so great to have you on, and hopefully we can have you on again and make this a regular thing. Always just keep checking in and seeing what the latest news is. I hope that's okay with you.
Love to do that. And as a matter of fact, on her way out of CNP, I was running in, and I ran into our friend Sandy Froman, who was here for a meeting. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, our community really does have close ties with the NRA. Look at the number of NRA board members, of course, national leadership, yourself and Sandy Froman. You know, for a place like Southern Arizona with as many blue staters and anti-gun people as there are, there is really quite a Second Amendment force, you know, standing up for our constitutional rights.
The Southern Arizona Mafia. Look, can I throw out the?
Yeah.
I'm on Facebook and Instagram. I one of the things I've tried to do is I'm totally accessible, and that hadn't changed with my changed role. I do say though that if you get personal on Facebook with me, that now I've changed my policy. I will block you. Most people though are really civil. Our members are in some cases concerned, but they are very supportive. So you folks come check me out. You can always message me. I'm open to all our membership.
And it's Willis Lee, W-I-L-L-E-S, Lee, L-E-E. Find him on Facebook, on Twitter. Are you on Instagram as well, did I hear?
Yeah, Willis Lee, N-R-A.
All right.
Facebook and Instagram, and I'm out there on Twitter. Just before this, I tweeted that I was going to be on the radio with Bruce and Ed in 5 minutes, and that's my last tweet.
All right. Well, friends, this man is a patriot. We're here to support the Second Amendment. Thank you, Willis. And folks, please support our great sponsors, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, and Corazon Cabinets. Each of these great companies are well-run, local businesses. All their profits stay in Tucson to help our community. We know each of these owners. They love our hometown, and they deserve your support. Until next week for Inside Track, when we'll be here with some interesting topics as well. I'm Bruce Ash.
And Eb Wilkinson.
Good afternoon.